Manual Prayer Workshop is actually kind of the ending phase of my Power of Joy class. And my Power of Joy class is a class I've been teaching for a couple years. Well, anyway, I taught it many years ago, and then I've taught it again last year for a few times. And the Power of Joy class has been just an incredible, fun thing for me to do because it's given me an outlet to bring a number of different resources together, mostly from the Life Model Group, Dr. Jim Wilder, Mary Beth Poole, and others who've developed some incredible materials. And for those of you who've not been at Power of Joy, I brought a ton of resources with me. Some of them are my resources. Most of them are life model type resources. And if you're wondering what any of them are, the ladies at the table or some of the Power of Joy people that somehow mostly ended up on this side, I guess because they were glad to see one another and ended up together. But anyway, those are just for your availability. No pressure on any of it. We just bring that because they've been incredibly helpful to us. But in my Power of Joy class, what I've done is I've kind of worked out my own model of recovery that is based on three key principles. And the first one is that we all need to be in joy-filled community so that we are being refilled constantly. The reality is each one of us comes into life, or not necessarily comes into life, but we come into, let's say, adulthood with different levels of joy capacity because of the joy that has been poured into us in our lives. So, for example, if your parents were in a wonderful place when you were born, their marriage was strong, they had great models before them, they were able to be incredibly delighted in you all the time, even when you did, you know, things that kids do like make messes and cry at inconvenient times and wake you up at 3 o'clock in the morning. If they were able to get through their disruptions quickly and always communicate to you that even in the hard times, I love you, I delight in you, I'm glad to be with you, then you have a full joy bucket. And so the analogy that I use is that of a 5-gallon bucket. That if you have 5 gallons of joy, guess what? You are going to be strong enough to handle about anything that comes your way in life. Now, unfortunately, that scene I just described, I've never met anyone that grew up in that kind of environment. Because we all grew up with parents, no matter how good of people they were fallen, they were broken, they had their own struggles, they came from their own dysfunctional backgrounds. And so as a result, we come into adulthood with different levels of joy that's been poured into us. And the key component there is that we are able to handle as much pain as we have joy. So if you have 2 gallons of pain, of joy in your bucket and you get 1.5 gallon pain event, then you're able to handle that well, you're able to suffer well, you're able to act like yourself in the midst of the pain. But if you get to 2 gallons and 1 ounce, guess what happens? The scale tips, your brain flips switches in, the switches get flipped in your brain, and you lose the ability to act like yourself. We've all done it. We've all flipped our lid. We've all looked back and said, why did I do that? I knew better than that. Because we lost our ability to be ourselves because our pain was greater than our joy. And that's a real short, brief introduction to a lot of teaching that I do in Power of Joy. But so that's the basic problem. And so our goal is to try to keep our joy levels higher than our pain levels. And one way that you can do that is if you can picture a 5-gallon bucket underneath a running faucet, guess what happens? That bucket keeps getting filled. Which brings me to a point I sort of skipped, but it'll fit here as well, is the other reality is that all our buckets leak. In addition to starting off life with low capacity because our parents, our community, our family of origin was not able to pour into us the way that we were designed to be poured into, when we had trauma, when we had painful events in our life, It's like there's holes that get blasted in our bucket. And so what capacity, so we may have 3 gallons of capacity, but as it leaks out over time, we get weaker and weaker, and it takes less pain to cause us to flip our lid, lose our relational circuits, and start not acting like ourselves. So that's why being under a spigot in a joy community where people are delighting in us allows us to be more of ourselves. But then the one goal of recovery then is learning to allow Jesus to meet us in our wounded places and patch the holes in our buckets. And that's one of the things that Emmanuel Prayer does. And we'll talk a little bit more about that later. But I don't want to say that Emmanuel Prayer is just for plugging those holes, because it's also about raising our capacity. Because when we experience Jesus meeting us in places, I am always blown away as I lead Emmanuel sessions with people at how much joy he pours into them. Often in some goofy and fun ways. And that is a beautiful thing. And then the third aspect of what I call joy-based recovery, and the image on the right is a three-legged stool. I use the analogy that a three-legged stool, each leg is essential. Because if you remove one leg from a three-legged stool, guess where you end up? On your back. Because the stool isn't going to support you. And so the third leg of recovery is growing your maturity, which leads me to a quick infomercial for January. Because in January, on Thursday nights at 7 p.m. in this room, I will be doing an 8-week class on maturity and attachment, talking about how do we grow our maturity so that, guess what we don't do? We don't blow our own holes in our buckets. Because guess what happens when your immaturity causes you to do dumb things? Well, then you blow new holes in your bucket that lower your joy and usually other people's joy around you. And so a critical aspect of recovery also is growing your maturity. But today, our focus is going to be on maximizing our joy input by experiencing connections with Jesus and by allowing Jesus to plug our holes as he meets us in painful places. But before we go into that, I think a very good place to always begin is just to kind of set a biblical foundation. And the biblical foundation for Emmanuel Prayer is really quite a simple thing. Now, let me give you just a little bit of my own background here. I grew up in a very ultra-conservative biblical framework where the Bible was the most important thing. We worship the Bible more than Jesus. Okay, we were often very much like the Pharisees who were so focused on figuring it out and getting it right that we often missed God. Now, I tell you that not to bash my heritage, but to let you know that I come from a background that places a very high value on the Bible. And one of the reasons I want to set that stage, and then the other part of that is, I grew up in a very dispensational background that basically said once God got the scripture written through the apostles, he just left it and he won't come back until Jesus returns. Now that's an oversimplification, but in my background, in my heritage, anything charismatic, anything even remotely charismatic or any whiff of God doing more than he had already done was seen as a terrifying thing. And the reason I bring that out is because oftentimes with Emmanuel Prayer, people start getting this sense of, this is too charismatic for me. This is way out there. Well, I find it real interesting that the people that I learned Emmanuel Prayer from are Dr. Jim Wilder, who's from a Nazarene, Church of the Nazarene background, and Dr. Carl Lehman, who's from a Mennonite background. So we're not talking way out there kind of stuff. Now, if you're from a charismatic background, please don't take any of what I said as me trying to speak against where you're coming from. That's not what I'm saying at all. I just want to kind of set you at ease to begin with to say that Emmanuel connections, I believe, are as biblical as it could be. And so let me just give you a couple places, a couple examples of that. In Matthew 28:20, remember Jesus is getting ready to ascend into heaven. And one of the very last things he says to his disciples is, "And surely I am with you always to the very end of the age." Surely I am with you always to the very end of the age. Now, I'm still here, so that tells me the age is not ended. Okay? And Jesus' name is Emmanuel, one of his names, which means God with us. And then a second place where I want us to look at for the biblical foundation is Luke 24:13-32. We don't have time to go into the whole story today, but it is a story that I think so typifies my Christian experience. Because you see, in the story in Luke chapter 24, you have the two disciples leaving Jerusalem, talking amongst themselves and trying to understand things because, you know, Jesus, they thought he was the Messiah. They thought he was going to fix everything. They thought he was going to kick Rome out, etc., you know, give the power back to Israel. And then he went and got himself killed. And that really messes with our plans. And then on top of that, these women say they saw him, and that makes no sense. And so they're walking away from Jerusalem. And walking away from Jerusalem is a critical part of that story. Because even though the women said they had seen Jesus, they must not have believed it, or there's no way they would be leaving Jerusalem. So they're walking away from Jerusalem, discussing things among themselves, when Jesus walks up beside them. And the reason I say that this is so much like most of my Christian experience is think about this. The two disciples on the road to Emmaus were experiencing their life with Jesus right beside them and oblivious to his presence. Welcome to my world. I have lived most of my Christian life oblivious to Jesus' presence. But question, does my lack of awareness mean he's not there? No. He has been with me. If Matthew 28:20 is true, he has been with me every step, every breath, every moment of my life from before conception through today and until I go be with him completely. The problem is not his lack of being with me. It's my not being aware of his presence. Well, guess what? That's where the disciples were too. Because as they're walking along, well, Luke describes it, and if you look in verse 16, it says specifically they were kept from recognizing him. Now, Luke doesn't tell us what kept them. Could have been, you know, it could have been the enemy preventing them from seeing him. It could be just, you know, how many times have you run into somebody at Walmart that you know, say, from church or someplace else, and you don't recognize them because you ran into them in a different environment than you normally see them? Very possibly. Very likely, I think it was the fact that they believed he was dead. And when you believe somebody's dead, you're not looking for them anymore. Okay? Luke doesn't tell us what prevented them from recognizing him. But what it says is they were kept from seeing him. But then after they go along, and when Jesus breaks bread and starts praying, in verse 31 it says, their eyes were opened and they recognized him. Their eyes were opened. What that tells me is that God did something. What that tells me is that God acted, He removed what was preventing them, and they saw and realized that Jesus was with them. And then there's another real critical phrase. Sorry, I'm behind on my slides. And I think I have the verse wrong on that, because that doesn't add up. After their eyes were open and they were discussing it, they said, "Were not our hearts burning within us when He explained the Scriptures to us?" See, once they recognized Jesus' presence with them, they were able to look back and say, "Oh, don't you remember how our hearts were burning within us as He was explaining Scripture?" And the reason that that's important to us is because oftentimes we can learn to recognize Jesus' presence with us by looking backwards and paying attention to how our body feels. So keep that thought in mind, and we'll come back to it in a little bit. Now, before we go any further, what I want to do is, first of all, just kind of explain some different forms of Emmanuel prayer. And Emmanuel prayer is something that, in one sense, I believe goes all the way back to the very first century. And I believe that you can find, as you study church history, as you read the writings of spiritual people, I think you can find semblances, you can find aspects of which people have been doing Emmanuel prayer all along. But in the last 10 years or so, Carl Lehman, Jim Wilder, and some others have been working on this model of Emmanuel prayer that is new yet old. Does that make sense? And in that, there's been really three forms of Emmanuel prayer that I want to kind of differentiate from to help you understand some of the different ways to approach this. And the first one is what we call IP journaling. And I was just informed by Margaret this week that for techie people, when you say IP, it means Internet Protocol. Well, in my world, IP just means Emmanuel Prayer. So if I use IP for shorthand, you know I'm meaning Emmanuel Prayer, not Internet not anything else, all right? And in IP journaling, this was introduced a couple years ago at the Thrive Conference. And the book Joyful Journeys over here, which I apologize, I meant to bring more copies of it, and then we had somebody kind of clean us out in the last 2 weeks, and Lawrence, and I didn't realize it. So there's only 4 copies of the IP journaling book, which is called Joyful Journeys. And I'm really sad about that, because I think that is the best beginning place for most people. Now, it is something that anybody can do. In fact, if you notice in your handout page, the third sheet there is a 1-page guide for Emmanuel journaling. What I will tell you up front is, just try it. Okay? In fact, I think my experience with most people is, they do much better reading the book after they've tried it and experienced it and said, "Oh wow, what just happened?" But in Emmanuel journaling, one of the real strengths of Emmanuel journaling is that anybody can do it anytime, anywhere. You don't have to have someone guiding you through it. All you have to have is a pen or a keyboard. All you have to do is sit down and literally just read the prompts and write whatever comes to your mind and just try to free write, flow, whatever comes out, bring it out. And after you go through the steps and if you finish the page, then find somebody that you can read it out loud to. Call somebody on the phone, get with a friend, and as you read it out loud, it's amazing how many times when you write something, you think, well, that might be a little significant, or you might write something saying, well, that's no big deal. And then when you read it out loud to someone, the gears fall into place, and you hear so clearly what God is speaking to you. All right? So the real strength of Emmanuel prayer journaling is anybody can do it anytime, anywhere. All right? Now, a second time type of Emmanuel prayer is what we are going to do today. We call it the share Emmanuel approach. And I'm not going to spend much time right now explaining it because I'm going to spend the rest of the morning explaining it. But the real strength of Share Emmanuel is that I can, somebody like me can come in and teach 50 plus people or 500 people the process and break you up into small groups, and you can experience Emmanuel connections and Emmanuel prayer working with one another with the safety net of appreciation. And again, we'll dive into that more in a little bit. And then the third type of Emmanuel prayer is what we call facilitated Emmanuel prayer. And in facilitated Emmanuel prayer, these are sessions with a facilitator like myself who has some training, some gifting, some skill in helping people connect with Jesus. Now, the strength of facilitated Emmanuel prayer is that you can often go to deeper places. You can also do more focused work on trauma recovery. You can focus on specific painful places. But just a side note here. Even when I do facilitated Emmanuel prayer sessions with people who come in with a very specific, I want to work on this trauma, I want to work on this wound, I always tell them, okay, you're welcome to ask Jesus about that, but he may want to take you someplace else. Because the goal of Emmanuel prayer, and one of the things that distinguishes it from other forms of emotional and spiritual healing, is that the goal of Emmanuel prayer is not the healing of a wound, but the deeper connection with Jesus. That the goal of Emmanuel prayer is not pain relief or symptom resolution. The goal is drawing closer to Jesus. Now, please understand, in that process, Jesus often does a lot of trauma healing. He does a lot of symptom resolution, because guess what? That pain is often one of the barriers preventing us from deeper intimacy with Jesus. But if our goal is feeling better, then we have a different idol. That really becomes an idol. If the goal is knowing Jesus better, then guess what? Then getting rid of all that, getting rid of those traumas and those painful places is a step in the process of getting closer to Jesus. And so, as you do Emmanuel prayer journaling, as we do Share Emmanuel today, let me encourage you to keep that as a backdrop. The goal is deeper intimacy with Jesus. A quick story in that regard. When I was first learning the Emmanuel prayer process, when I first learned it, I came home from my first Thrive conference where it was taught and introduced. And I had one gentleman I was working with. He was an older gentleman who had been incredibly shut down all his life. In fact, of men who's come into our groups, he walked into the group and I don't remember how many weeks it was before he said anything. Eyes down, no eye contact, incredibly shut down. And one thing I remember about him was I had started working with him individually on a weekly basis right before I went to Thrive. And I came home with this Emmanuel prayer new tool in my toolbox, and I said, okay, would you do this with me? Now, we'll call him Bob. His name's not Bob. But so he said, sure, I'll try anything. And the first Emmanuel prayer session I did with him was just textbook classic. He went to this sweet, fun place, got some joy capacity built up, and it was just beautiful and wonderful. And I thought, oh, this is great, perfect, wonderful. Comes back the second week. And so we start off, and I take him back to where he was the first week. He gets connected with Jesus. And then I say, okay, well, just ask Jesus where he wants to take you today. And he said, I'm in the strip club. And I'm like, this is not good. Because you see, that was his huge shame place. Is that in the last year, he had gotten into a very addictive pattern of going to a strip club and spending money and degrading himself and et cetera, et cetera. And he was devastated about it. And so I'm like, okay, so I remembered a tool and I said, okay, well, just ask Jesus if this is really where he wants you to go or if there's someplace else. Because often the enemy will throw things in as distractions. And he says, no, I'm still in the strip club. And one of the basic things that I'll teach you is that you describe everything. And I'm thinking, no, that's not good here. But I'm like, okay, so what's happening? He says, well, I'm in the strip club and I'm with this one girl who has always been nice to me. And really that was his biggest draw there, was not even the sexual thing. It was this one girl who was nice to him. Now, she really liked his money, but she was giving him some joy. And that's where he was drawn. And so I'm new to this. I'm scrambling. I'm thinking, okay, what am I going to do here? And so I just remembered the process. And I said, I don't know what else to do. So ask Jesus if he can show you where he is. And I'm thinking, oh, wait a second. The words came out of my mouth. And I'm like, well, that's a really dumb question. Jesus is not in a strip club. And his response, I'll never forget. He says, oh, there he is. He's up above her left shoulder. And I said, oh, really? Well, ask him if there's anything he wants to say to you. And I'll never forget his response. He said, Jesus just told me, what you are looking for is not her, but me. Emmanuel prayer is about connecting more intimately with Jesus. And he will meet us anywhere. And that's the beautiful part of this process. And so all three forms of Emmanuel prayer are designed to help us make those Emmanuel connections. But all three forms have their unique place and opportunities. For example, as I said before, anybody can do IP, Emmanuel prayer journaling, all by themselves. Even if you don't have anybody to read it to, you can read it out loud to yourself, and it's amazing how even that often will draw those connections. The Share Emmanuel has the advantage of being able to teach it to a larger group and multiple people doing it at once. Facilitated Emmanuel prayer has the advantage of being able to go into deeper places, though it's amazing how deep a places some of the others will go also. But each has their limitations. Facilitated Emmanuel prayer has a huge limitation of, if I signed every one of you up for an Emmanuel prayer session, it would be July before we got to all of you. But I'm hoping and praying that before you leave here today, each one of you will have made a significant Emmanuel connection. And so that kind of sets the stage for us. And so what I want us to do now is I want us to dive into the Share Emmanuel model of Emmanuel prayer. And just to give you a little bit of direction of where we're going today, is this morning I'll spend time teaching this process. And we'll actually do it with one another. We'll do parts of it with sharing with a partner, somebody next to you. And then I'll do a facilitated Emmanuel prayer demonstration after a break. And then we'll break for lunch. And then after lunch, we'll come back and I will walk you through a flow chart of how to do Emmanuel prayer with one another. And then we'll break up into groups of threes and fours, and we will do Emmanuel prayer together. But what we're doing this morning will be part of your Share Emmanuel experiences with one another this afternoon. All right? And so in Share Emmanuel begins with an illustration that we call on a hilltop with God. And what I want you to picture here is picture a hilltop, and up on this hilltop you've got a grassy plain, you've got some great shade, and you've got some chairs. And you've got these distinct places where you meet with God. And these places are, first of all, what we call an appreciation seat. And I should have gotten some chairs just for demonstration, so let's see if I can do that without knocking over somebody's drink. But what I want you to picture is two very different, distinct chairs. And the first one is what we call the appreciation seat. And in an appreciation seat, you are aware and of and are feeling appreciation. Okay? That's what it feels like to be with God. You know, think about it. And we'll do some appreciation exercise in a little bit. But have you ever had one of those moments where you just can't believe how good God is to you? And you just feel that appreciation. Maybe your child brings you a dandelion flower. Maybe you see a beautiful sunrise. Just something, and you feel that appreciation and your body relaxes. Okay, that is an appreciation seat. And your brain relaxes, and that's what it feels like to be with God. Or one example Jim Wilder gives is that they also say for ladies, many of you will recognize this feeling. It's that feeling when a mother's milk lets down, nursing with a baby. There's just that sense of yes. Okay? That's the appreciation seat with God. Then the next seat I want you to see is what we call the interactive seat. And the interactive seat are times that we can sense that God is with us, that He's glad to be with us, and there is some form of interaction taking place. It may be verbal, we may hear words, we may have a conversation, or sometimes it may just be that we experience God smiling on us. We just have this deep sense of connection that we know God is with us, that He's glad to be with us, and we have this interaction that goes back and forth between us and God. Does that make sense? Okay. So imagine being up on this beautiful hilltop with God, and then as you look down the hill out into the valley, what you see in the bottom of the valley is this huge patch of thorns. And it's a gnarly, if you're from, you know, if you've ever been to West Texas, you know, I can't help but think of it's, you know, it's mesquite grown all together with their thorns sticking out everywhere. And what I want you to get from that image is that the thorns and the thorn patch are the pains and traumas of our lives. Now, question. Given the choice between this hilltop with God or the valley of thorns, where would you rather be? On the hilltop, okay. Well, question. Where does most counseling and often many inner healing ministries spend most of their time? In the thorns. No wonder we're often pretty miserable. Okay. I want to give you that image to help you understand part of why the focus needs to be on connection with Emmanuel. Because it only makes logical sense that it's much better to be on the hilltop with God than stuck in the thorns. Now, it also makes sense that we need to resolve some thorns. Okay? That for our life to be better, we need to allow God to lead us into the places that He wants to heal and change. But question, which is easier? Finding the path back to God from the middle of the thorns, or looking down from the hilltop to the thorns in that direction? So the image I want you to see is that we want to spend most of our time on the hilltop with God, and then we want to go down and make small forays into the valley of thorns, and then get back while we still know the path. So you get in and you make a little path, you make a little headway in the thorns, and before you get lost, before you get stuck, you go back. And then guess what happens in time after you keep going in the same path through the thorns and you come back and you go through and you come back? Well, one, you learn how to navigate it. Two, the path gets a little wider each time you go through. And so that image is what we are going to try to do. We are going to try to not start in the thorns. Now, please understand, many of you have spent some time in theophostic or other forms of inner healing or emotional healing where you've spent a lot of time in the thorns and have experienced some good fruit from it. I don't want to denigrate any of that. What I want to describe, though, is an easier, better path. Carl Lehman, years ago, analogy he gave that stuck with me is, he says, when he was doing it the old way and then doing the Emmanuel way, what he learned was the old way now looks like doing dentistry without Novocaine. And that's one of the reasons we run from it so much. But if we can learn to spend most of our time on the hilltop with God, and then make forays and go back and forth. And most importantly, guess what we can do on the hilltop when we're interacting with God? We can ask Him which specific thorns He wants us to go work through. Rather than just, what's most painful today? Okay, Jesus, what am I ready to work through today? See the difference? Now, the thing that we need to always be looking for to know that we're on the hilltop with God, to know the direction and pathway that we are to go, is what we call shalom, which is the Hebrew word for peace. But in this sense, it's what I call God peace. And in Colossians 3:15, Paul writes, "Let the peace of God rule over your hearts, to which you were also called in one body, and be thankful." Now, what's really interesting about this verse is the word rule there can and probably should be translated umpire. And it comes from a realm of competition where an umpire would watch two contestants perform and choose who was best. So think about that for a moment. Let the peace of Christ be the judge that determines which is best. Do you realize that the enemy will push, he will pressure, he will do many things to try to get us go down a path? But do you know one thing the enemy has never done for me? He has never once given me a sense of peace. And so the peace test is a critical thing that we use to try to know, is this from Jesus? Is this the enemy's attacks? Because here's what you need to understand, and again, a lot of this I go into more depth in my Power of Joy series. But what you need to understand is that God will bring conviction in our life. And sometimes that conviction is pretty pointed and pretty hard. But guess what it always has with it? Sweet smell of hope and a sense of peace. How much peace is there in condemnation? None. And yet condemnation and conviction sometimes look similar, and yet they're night and day different when you apply the peace test. But Paul says there is therefore now no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus. So, for example, when I lead Emmanuel prayer sessions, there are many times that somebody will get someplace and, you know, I'm kind of a go-getter. I kind of want to move and I, you know, sometimes I'm a shark that smells blood and I want to go after things. And sometimes God will just have people in these places and I'm anxious and wanting to move forward and they're just perfectly peaceful. And I get a little frustrated because I just think we need to be moving faster. But you know what I've learned? Is my job is to facilitate, not direct. I am not to guide the session. I am to just help the person when they get stuck. And one thing I've learned is when someone's in a peaceful place, I'll let them stay there as long as they feel peaceful. Because guess what? Jesus knows a lot more of what they need than I do. And so there have been many sessions that I've done with people where we have just started, they've gotten to an appreciation, they've gotten to a place of peace, and I'll ask them if they want to, if Jesus wants them to go someplace else, and they just stay in this place of peace. I had one woman, she's an artist, so this will help you fit that. As we did appreciation with her, where does Jesus want to take you? And she said, I'm just seeing all these colors. Oh, and these colors are just amazing. And we spent like 30 minutes with her just sitting there watching colors go by. I'm like, am I doing something wrong here? But you know what? When she was done with her session, she just said, wow, that was the most amazing thing I've ever experienced. Why? Well, I'm not an artist. Colors don't mean to me what they mean to her. So we always look for peace. And we can rest in the peace that he provides. Now, another critical part of the Share Emmanuel is that our Emmanuel connections, whether they're in Share Emmanuel or IP journaling or even in facilitated Emmanuel prayer, one of the most powerful things we can do is after we've made those connections, tell the story of our connection to others. But here's a real critical thing on that, is that we need to learn to tell the story without the thorns. Okay, for example, if someone got up here and told a story of their childhood of horrific childhood sexual abuse, and then Jesus met them and healed them, it'd be a beautiful story. But guess what would happen to half the people in the room? You would get overwhelmed. You would get triggered by your own stories. And so, guess what? Especially in group contexts, especially when you don't know the other person's history or capacity, it's much better to tell the story without the thorns. So, and we'll do a little of this at the end of the day, is if you can tell the story by saying, you know, I went to this memory and it was a horrific memory, a horrible place, and my body was all tense and I felt yada yada, you know, and you describe how you felt and et cetera, et cetera. And then Jesus opened my eyes to see his presence with me. And this, and this changed. Now, do you see how the story still has its power and its beauty? But without the thorns. And what that does is when we're able to tell our stories of a connection with Jesus, when we're able to tell our stories of appreciation, then what it does is it creates hospitality. It creates a sweet place where we feel welcomed, where we feel relaxed. And so one of the beautiful things that you can do, that we're going to do today, is we're going to share appreciation memories with one another. And what you'll find is that appreciation stories are contagious. When somebody's talking about something that was good and that was a blessing to them and how they felt as God brought them into this place, we invariably get memories of our own triggered. You know, anxiety can be contagious. We all understand that. But guess what? So is appreciation. And in fact, I would say that appreciation is stronger than anxiety. And as we share our appreciation stories, as we share this appreciation seat on the hilltop with others, it provides an opportunity for them to experience as well. Now, the other critical thing that we're going to keep referring back to today is that appreciation memories are also our lifelines. And what I mean by that is, if you picture a pool, you know, at every pool, they will have hanging on the wall, you know, that white styrofoam lifeline, rope on it, and a, a ring, a flotation ring. And do you know the reason for that? Is because humankind has learned that if you jump in the water to try to save someone from drowning, you are just as likely to experience them drowning you as you rescuing them. But if you throw them a flotation device, they can grab hold of it, and in their panic, that flotation device still keeps them above the water level. Well, appreciation serves the same thing. That as you build your appreciation memories, they can be lifelines that keep you from drowning. They can also be lifelines that others can throw to us when they know our appreciation stories. And so that is a goal that we're going to have. We are going to learn to do appreciation and to share appreciation with one another so that when we get stuck in the thorns, someone else can throw us a lifeline that will help bring us back rather than climbing into the thorns with us and getting stuck with us. Well, let me ask you a question about appreciation. Have you noticed how your body feels when you are in a state of appreciation? What happens in your body when you genuinely appreciate something? Yeah. Okay. Your smiles come up and you just can't stop them. Have you noticed how tension begins to relax often? Appreciation has a tremendous effect. And so we're going to go ahead now. And I'm going to pray for you, pray for us, and we're going to each look for an appreciation. And then after we look for an appreciation, and in fact, let me just encourage you, some of you may need to move to a different chair. We're going to do a number of things today with just a partner, somebody beside you. And so after we do the appreciation, I'm going to have you turn and share that appreciation with the person beside you. And so we'll might need to do, some of you sitting out on the edge or whatever, you're going to need to find somebody and we'll work with that. But let's just pray and then we'll go from there. So Jesus, we just ask this morning that you would come and remind each one of us right now of something we could appreciate. Remind us of a meal we've had, a time with friends, a gift from you, a previous connection with you, just anything, Lord, that will help us remember how good your heart is towards us. And so let me just encourage each one of you to ask him personally, Jesus, please remind me of something I can appreciate. And then just have a little dialogue with him about that. And now whatever he's reminded you of, give it a name, one, two, or three words. That like makes a hook on it so you can hold on to it. Give it a name, and then find a partner, and both of you tell the other one your appreciation story and the name of your appreciation. Okay, and as you're sharing and as you're listening, try to pay attention to how your body feels. And then just have a little dialogue with him about that. And now whatever he's reminded you of, give it a name. One, two, or three words. That like makes a hook on it so you can hold on to it. Give it a name. And then find a partner. And both of you tell the other one your appreciation story and the name of your appreciation. Okay, and as you're sharing and as you're listening, try to pay attention to how your body feels.